Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Ever get that feeling? Like, what you see isn't the whole picture. Like, there's, I don't know, forces at work that we're not fully aware of.
Yeah, that feeling you're describing, like the official story, whatever it is, just doesn't add up. There's something more going on, something deeper, maybe even a little scary.
Exactly. And that feeling, that intuition, is exactly what we're diving into today. We're talking about a real-life thriller, exploring power, money, intelligence, all that hidden stuff.
It's about those hidden systems and the people pulling the levers, shaping things behind the scenes.
Right. If you're into that kind of exploration, like understanding how the world really works, then this is the place to be. Hit that like and subscribe button if you want more deep dives like this.
It's not about conspiracy theories, you know? It's about taking a hard look at complex systems and the people operating within them.
So today we're going deep on Whitney Webb's One Nation Under Blackmail, Volume 2. Links down in the description if you want to check it out. And, there's been a lot of sensational headlines about some of the people in this book. But we're going beyond that. We're digging into the deeper currents of influence and potential corruption that Webb lays out.
It's about unpacking how power is really used in ways that most people never even see.
Okay, so one of the core ideas in the book, and it comes from a quote by Gerald Nadler, is pretty stark. Government by blackmail is incompatible with democracy. Whoa. What does that even mean, though, in this context?
Webb's argument is that blackmail, especially how it's evolved with technology, plays a huge, maybe even the biggest role in manipulating powerful people and shaping world events.
It's the evolution of blackmail that's key here. We're not just talking compromising photos anymore. It's the massive amount of personal data that's being collected. It creates a whole new level of leverage and control. All right, so think of mass surveillance as like a giant arsenal of potential blackmail material. And it's a perfect segue to Jeffrey Epstein. He became infamous for sex trafficking, obviously. Horrible stuff. But Webb argues that the mainstream narrative kind of steered everyone away from Epstein's other connections. Specifically, his ties to intelligence agencies, the CIA and Israeli intelligence, to be exact.
The focus stayed very narrowly on the sex trafficking, which, is obviously important, but it also kind of acted like blinders, blocking us from seeing this whole other dimension of Epstein's network.
And this is where things get really unsettling. Webb points out that Epstein visited the Clinton White House 17 times between 1993 and 1995. 17, that's a lot. Many of those meetings were with this guy named Mark Middleton, who, as the book details, died under some pretty suspicious circumstances in 2022. And even more interesting, Middleton himself was involved in foreign espionage activities, which Congress investigated in the 90s, related to some shady fundraising for Clinton's reelection campaign.
And thinking about the context of that time, there were lots of concerns about foreign influence in U.S. politics. And Middleton was right in the middle of some of that.
Here's the really messed up part, though. And the book stresses how this was totally underreported. Epstein supposedly brought young women with him to some of these White House meetings. Think about that. A massive scandal, potentially, right at the center of the Clinton administration. And it barely got any attention. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, it makes you wonder, right? Why didn't these allegations get investigated more thoroughly by the media, by officials, anyone? I mean, think about the implications. National security, the integrity of the presidency is huge.
So let's shift gears a bit and talk about Epstein's earlier life. Smart guy, clearly. Skipped a couple grades, graduated high school early, went to Cooper Union and NYU, even studied at NYU's current institute for a while. Never finished his degree, though. But it's his leaving Bear Stearns in 81 that's really weird. Conflicting stories everywhere.
Yeah, there's the official story of the one Epstein put out about leaving to start his own business.
Yeah, that's what he said. But inside Bear Stearns, people were talking about a technical infringement. Later on, Stephen Hoffenberg, his close associate, claimed Epstein was actually caught doing illegal stuff. Even a former executive from Bear Stearns said Epstein was asked to leave because of very serious stuff, supposedly related to something shady with an airline ticket on an expense report. But other people deny that. So which is it? The fact that you have all these different stories from the same place, it kind of tells you something, right?
Oh, absolutely. All these inconsistencies. It means there's more to the story. Something Bear Stearns probably wanted to keep under wraps.
And the time right after he left Bear Stearns before he officially registered as a money manager in 88, the book describes it as murky, which directly contradicts his later claims that he was managing billions for billionaires starting in 81. The timeline just doesn't match up. So what was he doing during those years?
That murky period is a total black box. And those kinds of gaps in someone's public record, especially someone like Epstein, That's where you find the secret activities, the shady connections, all that. If he wasn't managing billions legitimately, then where was the money coming from? Who was he working with?
This leads to some really explosive stuff that Webb brings up. Hoffenberg claims that in the early 80s, Epstein was trained in arms trafficking and money laundering by Adnan Khashoggi and Sir Douglas Leese, no less. And this was specifically for Israeli interests, supposedly to help their intelligence operations in the UK.
Hoffenberg's claims are definitely attention-grabbing. And considering his close financial ties to Epstein later on, they deserve a closer look, even if they're not proven. And Adnan Khashoggi, man, that guy was a legend in the world of arms dealing. Known for his wealth and influence, for sure.
Oh, yeah. And Khashoggi's biographer even wrote about how he operated. It was all about extravagance. Girls, food, cash, whatever his powerful clients wanted, he provided. It was a world of favors, you know, and potential compromises.
And Sir Douglas Leese, the book mentions his connections to intelligence circles, too, though maybe more on the periphery. It just adds another layer to this whole training scenario.
Okay, so it's not just Hoffenberg saying this. Victor Ostrowski, he was an officer in the Israeli Mossad. He also indicated that Epstein had ties to Israeli intelligence. Hoffenberg even claimed Ghislaine Maxwell was the one who introduced them. And then there's Zev Shilev, an investigative reporter. He cited an anonymous source, someone high up, who backed up Ben Menashe's claims that Epstein was an Israeli intelligence asset. It's pretty wild that you have all these different accounts all pointing in the same direction.
It's a pattern, isn't it? This theme of Epstein being connected to intelligence, it keeps popping up. And even though none of it's been definitively proven, that consistency is hard to ignore.
Right. And then there's Epstein's trip to Israel in 2008. Super strange timing. It was right in the middle of his legal troubles in the U.S. just before his sentencing. He stayed at the Tel Aviv Hilton, said he was there for Passover. But he also met with Israeli research scientists and even toured Israeli military bases.
You don't just wander onto an Israeli military base, you know?
Yeah.
That trip, especially during such a sensitive time for him legally, really suggests that he had some pre-existing connections with Israeli security folks. Important connections, too.
Totally. And then there's his friendship with Ehud Barak. You know, the former prime minister and defense minister of Israel just adds another layer of intrigue to the whole thing.
Barak and Epstein, yeah, their relationship was well known. And given Barak's history in Israeli intelligence, you have to wonder what their connection really was all about.
And let's not forget about that foreign passport found in Epstein's safe after his arrest. It was from another country with a different name, issued back in the 80s. Prosecutors used that to argue he was a flight risk, especially with all the cash and diamonds they found in there, too. And it turned out he had multiple passports. What does that tell you about the kind of life this guy was living?
Having multiple passports with fake identities? Yeah, that's not your average tourist. It tells me he was prepared to travel secretly to operate outside the normal system. Secrecy was a big part of his life.
The book also gets into how blurry the lines are between organized crime and intelligence, highlighting guys like Robert Keith Gray. His career supposedly involved intelligence work, A&D, sexual blackmail schemes. Plus, he was connected to the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, or BCCI.
It happens a lot, actually. The worlds of crime and intelligence get all mixed up. People with ties to both, they're powerful and they're hard to track.
Right. And then there's Max Fisher, powerful guy. He supposedly had connections to both U.S. and Israeli intelligence. Just shows you how tangled this web is.
Fisher's career. Yeah, it touched so many sensitive areas, finance, politics, intelligence, the whole nine yards.
So 1987 was a big year, according to Webb's book. Epstein got involved in a financial venture with Stephen Hoffenberg and the Galitis family, big names in real estate. And wouldn't you know it, that's also the same year he supposedly met Donald Trump, maybe through Hoffenberg, who once famously said, "Donald's crowd was my crowd," all these circles intersecting.
Not surprising, really, when you think about the New York elite, how everyone's connected. But the timing and the nature of their relationships, yeah, it's definitely something to pay attention to.
Oh, and speaking of Trump and people with interesting pasts, the book mentions how in 88 he bought the Plaza Hotel, which has a history of sexual blackmail parties involving minors, no less. And those parties were linked to Roy Cohn, Trump's lawyer, mentor, friend. Another layer to the story, right?
But Roy Cohn and those activities, yeah, there's been reporting on that. And Cohn's relationship with Trump, it's definitely another thread in this web.
Even Epstein's real estate stuff in D.C. is suspicious. He kept leasing this State Department building until 97. And from 96 on, he sublet it to this high-profile lawyer named Ivan Fisher, The guy was known for representing some major drug traffickers, like guys connected to the French Connection and the Pizza Connection. Why would Epstein keep that lease and then sublet it to someone like that?
It's weird, isn't it? Makes you wonder what Epstein was doing with that property and what his connection was with that lawyer.
And then there's the Leslie Wexner mystery. He's a retail magnate, hugely successful. But he had this really close relationship with Epstein, who, on paper, wasn't in his league at all. Wexner gave Epstein power of attorney, bankrolled his lavish lifestyle, the whole thing. What could possibly explain that level of trust and support? Wexner's a smart guy. Why take a chance on someone like Epstein?
Yeah, it's one of the biggest head-scratchers in the whole Epstein saga. What did Wexner see in him, and why give him so much power?
Webb throws out a few possibilities. Maybe it was Epstein's alleged connections to arms dealers, those guys with intelligence ties. Or maybe it was his financial skills. Those are kind of vague. The book also points out that Epstein came into Wexner's life right after Arthur Shapiro was murdered. That case had possible organized crime links. So maybe Wexner saw Epstein's shady connections as a form of protection or a way to access certain circles.
The timing eye is interesting. If Wexner was feeling vulnerable or wanted to get into certain circles, Epstein's reputation might have seemed like an asset. Risky, but an asset.
Okay, and here's another layer to the Wexner thing. His foundation, the Wexner Foundation, it focuses on developing Jewish leaders in North America and Israel. Lots of their alumni end up in finance, government, even intelligence agencies. And Wexner's tight with AIPAC, which has its own alleged ties to Israeli intelligence. So this whole network of connections, it makes you wonder about the overlaps in interests and influence.
Yeah, it creates a really complex web, and Epstein's right there in the middle of it. Definitely worth a closer look.
Oh, get this. Epstein helped channel huge donations to Harvard through Wexner. That's how Rosofsky Hall got its name, named after one of Epstein's buddies at the university. The Wexner Foundation also funded the Harvard Kennedy School's Center for Public Leadership, which was run by David Gergen for a while. Gergen, of course, was an advisor to multiple presidents, and he has his own web of connections.
All of that puts Epstein and his people right in the heart of academia and the political establishment.
The book even mentions this group called the Mega Group. It was a low-key philanthropy thing, supposedly with members like Wexner and Charles Bronfman. Both those guys have been linked to organized crime and either intelligence, at least in some allegations. And some people even claim that MEGA was a code word for a CIA information exchange.
A group like that, with those kinds of connections, definitely raises questions about their goals and what they're up to.
So let's talk about Ghislaine Maxwell for a minute. The book touches on her upbringing, her relationship with her dad, Robert Maxwell. He was a media mogul with lots of his own ties to intelligence, some of it pretty controversial. Webb even suggests that Robert Maxwell might have seen his daughter's sexuality as a tool for influence.
Yeah, Robert Maxwell was a complicated guy. His background definitely cast a shadow over his kids' lives and who they associated with.
Right. The book also mentions Ghislaine's long-term relationship with Andrea Sicagna and how she started her own exclusive club, the Kit Kat Club. Interesting name, right? And remember Robert Keith Gray, the guy we talked about earlier? The book says he might have played a role in some of Robert Maxwell's big plans.
Understanding Ghislaine's early life in that world of power and intelligence connections, it's really important if you want to understand her later choices and who she hung out with.
Let's circle back to Epstein's 17 visits to the Clinton White House, starting in 93. Webb connects those visits not only to shady fundraising, but also to possible foreign espionage. He even brings up Vince Foster's death and how his office was searched without authorization afterward. And Hillary Clinton's chief of staff was involved in that.
Vince Foster's death. Yeah, that's been a source of speculation and conspiracy theories for decades.
The book also talks about Foster's role in managing private donations for White House renovations. Some of that money came from Epstein and from Clark Clifford, who was caught up in the BCCI scandal. Then there's that suicide note they found, which some people say was forged. And it mentioned a White House Historical Association fundraiser that Epstein was involved in. Makes you wonder if it was all connected to some espionage investigation.
All those inconsistencies and questions about the note. It keeps the speculation alive for sure.
And Webb even discusses allegations, although unproven, that Foster and Hillary Clinton were selling secrets to Israel, maybe other countries too, like China, and that Foster's Swiss bank account might have been involved. He also brings up the Chinagate scandal, which was about illegal campaign donations from foreign sources. And guess who was involved in that? John Huang and Mark Middleton, both of them connected to Epstein. It's like all these things are somehow connected.
It's a disturbing picture, isn't it? All these alleged connections, the potential espionage, vulnerabilities at the highest levels of government.
So moving on to technology and science, the book talks about Isabel Maxwell, Ghislaine's sister. She was involved in Israeli tech companies like ComTouch, and she had connections to Bill Gates and Paul Allen, the Microsoft founders. In fact, Microsoft even said that Magellan, a company owned by the Maxwells, would be powering the search function for MSN.
The Maxwell family's influence was everywhere, including the tech world, and their relationship with Microsoft. That's significant.
Totally. And then there's Nathan Myhrvold. He was Microsoft's first chief technology officer, close advisor to Bill Gates. He also reportedly had ties to Epstein. And Epstein himself was connected to supercomputer companies, like Thinking Machines. He was even close with Danny Hillis, the co-founder. Seems like Epstein was strategically trying to build relationships with people who were on the cutting edge of tech.
It's like he had this talent for connecting with influential people across all sorts of fields.
Exactly. And then there's John Brockman and the Edge Foundation. Epstein was associated with them, too. So now he's connected to this network of scientists and thinkers. And despite all the stuff we know about Epstein, Bill Gates met with him multiple times, even donated to MIT through him. Melinda Gates was reportedly not happy about that relationship, though. Why would someone like Bill Gates stay connected to Epstein?
Yeah, Gates and Epstein, that's caused a lot of debate. Raises questions about his judgment, what his motivations were.
And here's the really disturbing part. The book talks about Epstein's interest in eugenics. He supposedly wanted to seed the human race with his DNA. He even talked about it with scientists. And get this. He had this plan to impregnate 20 women at a time at his ranch in New Mexico. He was also connected to geneticists, like George Church at Harvard. It's really unsettling, the kind of mindset he had.
Yeah, that's some dark stuff. Really raises questions about his motivations and what he was doing with those scientists.
Let's talk about mass surveillance. Webb brings up Carbine, which is an NG911 platform with ties to Israel. Lots of concerns about the potential for mass surveillance and data access with that. Then there's the Promise software scandal involving stolen tech, U.S. and Israeli intelligence, Robert Maxwell, the whole thing. And it was supposedly connected to Main Core, which was all about using big data for domestic surveillance.
Surveillance technology and the role of intelligence agencies and private companies. Yeah, it's a complicated and often disturbing area.
The Total Information Awareness Program, or TIA, got shut down because people freaked out about privacy. But it allegedly continued in secret and evolved into private companies like Palantir, which was initially backed by the CIA. And Christine Maxwell, Ghislaine's sister, was involved in Chilliad, a company with software similar to Promise. So it's like this network involved in surveillance tech never really went away. And then there's Epstein's own company, Southern Trust. They focused on collecting DNA data, more concerns about privacy and data harvesting.
It just shows you how sophisticated surveillance tech has become and how easy it would be for governments and private companies to misuse it. We live in a digital world, and that means our data is vulnerable.
Okay, so let's talk about the scope of Epstein's sex trafficking operation. Jean-Luc Brunel, he was supposedly key in the modeling industry, recruiting young models for exploitation. Ghislaine Maxwell, of course, she was allegedly running the whole thing, managing the victims. And Epstein targeted victims from performing arts schools, places like Interlochen Center for the Arts. The way Maxwell supposedly operated, targeting vulnerable young women with fake promises, is really awful.
Yeah, those tactics are just heartbreaking. Shows you how predatory that whole network was, preying on the vulnerable.
Prince Andrew, Ghislaine Maxwell, and Jeffrey Epstein, they were all publicly linked, starting around 2000. The book mentions Andrew's role at UK Trade and Investment, or UKTI, and the accusations that he was helping with arms deals, especially in Indonesia. And Epstein's mentor, Adnan Khashoggi, he was big in the arms trade. Makes you wonder if there's a connection there.
Prince Andrew and Epstein, yeah, that's been a huge scandal, especially given his official role in promoting British trade.
And finally, the book looks at Bill Clinton's relationship with Epstein after he was president and how Epstein might have influenced the early days of the Clinton Foundation. There's documentation of Clinton flying on Epstein's plane to places like Singapore and China. Sometimes Maxwell was with him. It all raises questions, especially when you think about Chinagate.
Yeah, Clinton and Epstein after the presidency. Another thing that's raised eyebrows, considering what we know about Epstein and his circle.
Wow, that was a lot. A really intense deep dive into Whitney Webb's One Nation Under Blackmail, Volume 2. Gives you a lot to think about in terms of the forces shaping our world. What do you think?
Yeah, it's mind-blowing, the number of people, institutions, all the stuff going on as detailed in the book. It makes you really think about how things work.
What was the most surprising thing we talked about today? What really made you think? Let us know in the comments. Keep exploring these topics. Come to your own conclusions.
It's important to do this kind of deep investigation, to consider all sides of the story. That's how you really start to understand these issues.
Here's a final thought. After everything we've discussed about these networks of power, finance, and intelligence, how does that change the way you see the world? Not just history, but the reality we live in right now. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.